The old way of doing things makes sense for some things, like popcorn at the movies. But the old ways don't make sense if you expect more yield out of your acres, because there's a new way to unlock the full potential of your fields, and it starts when you plant Enlist corn. With four robust trait tolerances, glyphosate and glufosinate, plus 2,4-D choline and FOP, it unleashes ultimate weed control flexibility with multiple modes of action to fight weeds. See what's possible for your fields at enlist.com/corn.
Welcome to another exciting edition of The Thought Police. I'm Mike Graham and you are...
Free Gear Kevin O'Sullivan.
Free Gear Kevin O'Sullivan. It means a bit different though.
It doesn't quite rhyme, does it?
No, but also free gear from your point of view, something else. Well, at least it used to be.
It never was free. That was
the
problem.
That was the fucking problem. Yeah. Fucking expensive gear. Kia. But there we are. No suggestion, of course, that Keir Starmer's taking any mind-altering drugs, although he might be a better fucking prime minister.
Well,
there's
no suggestion that he's doing that, but it might provide an explanation for this fucking bizarre government we've got now.
Which gets worse by the week.
But fucking joke.
Let's illustrate how bizarre it is by two stories that came up this week, both involving Albanian burglars, for want of another description, right? One who got sent to jail for 2.5 years, ended up getting deported, which seems like a good idea. It's nice to see after 6 months they're going, right, you've done 6 months here, now you do the fucking rest of it over in Bulgaria, in Albania. But they paid him to go back. He then smuggles himself back in. And what does he do?
He then marries his... He's got this Lithuanian girlfriend. He marries her. They have a kid. He then applies for asylum. And because of the European Convention on Human Rights, because he's got a family here, he has a right to a family life. And therefore, his application to stay was successful. A man who fucking was sent to prison for burglary.
Right.
Yeah, for breaking our laws
which means he must have done a lot of burglary.
Prison. Well, you have to remember that. You know, we sort of blithely say, oh, this migrant went to prison for 6 months or whatever. Yeah. When you go to prison, it means you've really seriously broken our laws. So this fucker seriously breaks our laws, quite rightly gets deported, breaks our laws again by breaking back into the country, sneaking back in, marries his bird, has a fucking baby, and then is allowed to stay forever. Am I missing something?
I know. And of course, the baby will now be a British citizen, right? So technically speaking, even if he didn't want to become a British citizen, he can become one via his own child.
Yeah. Well, he can stay as long as he likes and probably will go that way because there's lots of...
And one of the chances is that under the system that we've now got that he can bring 58 members of his own family over here.
Almost certainly will. Loads of his burglar mates will come over. And what about the other one? This other one is even fucking...
This is another burglar.
Almost worse. Right. This is another Albanian burglar. Do these cunts do anything else except break into other people's fucking houses?
Well, they do, yeah.
Yes, they deal drugs.
They deal a lot of drugs.
They provide quite an important social
they
service.
They actually now run, because this came out, I think, a couple of weeks ago. He's a proper Home Office figures. They now run the entire cannabis business in Britain, right? And across most of Europe, most of the cocaine business as well. And they've just got a lock on every single illegal activity from smuggling guns to smuggling people to fucking smuggling drugs. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so this fucking guy, he comes in, he gets done once again for burglary. I think it was way back in 2016. Gets sent to jail, finishes and then is deported, quite rightly deported. Sneaks back into the country.
Yeah.
Starts burgling again,
quite.
Gets caught, goes to jail again, is deported again, then sneaks back into the country where he still resides because he's made an application for asylum.
Yes.
And under ECHR rules, under the rules of the European Convention on Human Rights, we cannot deport him. And not only is he enjoying a nice life here, he has filmed himself 90-minute video on TikTok and Instagram in his fucking £300,000 brand new Ferrari.
Unbelievable. So how does he get to stay then? What rule keeps him here?
Because when he came back the last time, he got nabbed, but he made an application for asylum. Right. Now that so what his status now is, he's on immigration bail.
Right.
But that means that until his asylum application is processed, he can stay here forever. And you know how long that can take. Can take 10 years.
There's no suggestion at the moment they're doing it any quicker than they were under the Tories, right? Because Home Office still don't really want to do it at all. So presumably what will happen is that they will at some point, in order to clear the backlog, will just grant everybody asylum, won't they? They'll just go, well, look, we've got 130,000, 150,000, whatever the fuck it is now, And we'll just give them all asylum. So then there's no backlog.
Yeah, well, Calamity Cooper's already done this to an extent, 40,000 of them, I believe. But this guy, right, the Ferrari driver, recently enjoyed a very nice holiday at a place called the Cabisbay Hotel in Cornwall, which is a 5-star luxury
house. Expensive.
Well, that's where they had the fucking G7 summit in 2020.
I knew I recognised it.
So he videoed himself strolling along the beach saying, having a lovely holiday. Like that, he's got a fucking electronic tag on.
Unbelievable.
It's fucking unbelievable.
It is a joke, isn't it? All those people as well that they released from prison, you know, in order to make room for the fucking rioters and everybody else. Half of the people that they were supposed to tag, they didn't tag. Half of them have now gone back inside because they committed more crimes, like we would have predicted. And it seems that they actually released more violent people than they meant to, because of some fucking cock-up in the administration of the deal. So not only are we no fucking use at locking people up, we're not any fucking use at letting them out either.
Yeah. And we were discussing earlier, you know, I want to know an answer to this question, because nobody seems to be able to give an adequate response. Yeah. And it is this. What the fuck does Britain get out of being a member of the European Convention on Human Rights?
Yeah.
What do we get out of being beholden to the European Court of Human Rights? Nothing.
No.
Nothing, except they keep coming in and telling us what we can and cannot do, or who can and cannot live here. Why don't we just say, fuck off, we're going to leave?
Yeah, exactly right. And people who say, as you've said before, you know, oh, we become a pariah state then, because, you know, only us, Belarusia and Russia, or Belarus, I should say.
Belarus.
Are the only ones that aren't signed up to it. Well, I don't give a fuck about that.
Make it a hat trick. Yeah. Fine by me.
Exactly right. There's plenty of African countries aren't signed up to it. There's plenty of fucking North American, South American countries. Yeah. They're not signed up to it. Caribbean countries not signed up to it.
By the way, do you want to know who's not signed up to it?
Yeah.
The European Union.
Is that right?
They're not in the ECHR.
Fucking hell.
It's fucking unbelievable.
Mind you, that is because, of course, they are not a nation, as much as people would
they
like to say.
They can be signed up to it. They could be signed up to it as an administrative body. They could definitely. Right. But they choose not to.
The whole point of the ECHR is that it's a sort of old-fashioned, very much out of kilter
modern
day 1950s kind of construct, which might have been of some use immediately after the Second World War, but is absolutely of no fucking use now whatsoever.
Yeah.
And people are just taking the piss, and lawyers are just taking the piss,
using
it as an excuse. I mean, let's face it, the Supreme Court that we've now got in this country is bad enough at fucking, you know, not carrying out the will of the people and not actually carrying out the laws that people would want them to, and putting fucking blocks in the way of any kind of right-wing policy like they tried to do with Rwanda, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Fucking ridiculous. I mean, you're right about the ECHR. It was set up in the slipstream in the wake of the Second World War in order to provide, you know, dignity and safety to the millions of people who were made homeless refugees after the war. That's what it was all about. It was about the aftermath of the Second World War.
Yeah.
And it was a good principle, good idea, you know. Now here we are, what is that, 70 years on, and it's just this warped fucking body that wrecks Britain's ability to do anything about its sovereign borders. It's a fucking joke. Don't forget, it was the ECHR, it was, what was it, 3 years ago when we were going to send that first plane to Rwanda with one migrant on board, but it was...
We did send one person there, didn't we?
Well, we in the end, but that plane was all set to take off, and it was very significant.
Right.
You know, we would have taken a plane off to Rwanda, and if you remember, at the last moment, some of these, you know, these lefty lawyers, these immigration lawyers, you know, called for a ruling from the ECHR in Strasbourg. So, literally, this fucking judge on the piss in some bar was phoned up and said, what could you do about that plane? Right. He said, it can't take off. And ever since then, our rural...
Pass me the fucking VSOP brandy.
You know, so the ECHR... The thing, when people say, people like us say, leave the fucking ECHR, and people, all the lefties go, oh, what about human rights? Leaving the ECHR doesn't mean we abandon our belief in human rights. We just don't need to be in a fucking stupid club.
Right. Also, I mean, the idea that Britain would suddenly become this kind of completely and utterly lawless
nation.
That's
my point, yeah.
By the way, it already is a bit of a fucking lawless nation. I mean, London now is so ridiculously lawless.
You know that.
I mean, fuck me. But, you know, the idea that after centuries and centuries of civilization, the Magna Carta, all of the fucking history that we've got, all of the laws that have been in place for hundreds and hundreds of years, we're not suddenly going to start stripping people of their rights. By the way, At the moment, for example, one of the things that people have said about the reason why Labour might struggle to introduce this VAT on private schools is that that could be in breach of an ECHR.
Yeah, that's funny, right? Isn't it?
Which would be fucking hilarious. But it's funny that they never use it really to protect the British people. They seem to only use it to protect foreign fucking criminals and people who shouldn't be here. Yeah.
And a lot of people say Tony Blair passed this thing called the Equality Act in 1998. And in it, it is written, so it's in our legislation, in our statute books, that we, in disputes involving foreigners, refugees, we have to defer to the ECHR. So a lot of people say, well, that means it's written into our law, so we can't just leave.
Right.
Well, I don't see, if we just left the ECHR, I don't think that law would apply at all. And the ultimate irony is, we're the only fucking nation in all of Europe that pays any attention to the ECHR. The French and the Germans routinely just ignore it. They just ignore
it. We could even do that, though. I mean, I've made this argument before.
No, we could.
Why don't we just ignore it? And that way you don't have to upset the lefties by saying we're leaving it, so we're still technically in it, but we just basically don't pay any attention to it.
Totally,
There's no reason why we have to fucking rule this country by a foreign court. It makes no sense.
Brexit and all that. The ECHR isn't connected to the EU. As I say, the EU's not even a member. The whole idea of Brexit was that we control our own country, that we have control on our sovereign borders. The ECHR overrules our right to do that.
Exactly.
Fuck off.
Exactly.
Leave.
But what I'm saying is that nobody ever suggests using it against a government like the one we've currently got, which is constantly trying to knock away our fucking rights. I mean, look at what happened during the aftermath of the riots. You know, all these people who were locked up for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Prison sentences of years. I mean, one guy got 9 years in prison for being violent towards a police officer. Now, I know that that's an offence, and before anybody goes, oh, yeah, well, would you want to just let them out? Well, no, but people don't get 9 years in prison unless they fucking killed someone. And this guy didn't kill anyone. Yeah. You know, the woman who's in jail for posting a Facebook post that she immediately took down, suggesting that the assailant in Southport might have been, a boat migrant, and might have been a Muslim. Yeah. All of that stuff. You know, that's infringing, surely.
The 18-year-old kid, just about to start his apprenticeship, unfurled a St George's Cross flag in front of a mosque in Rotherham.
Yeah.
He got 2 years and fucking 3 months ridiculous. For unfolding a fucking flag.
Right.
Yeah, two-tier Keir, two-tier Britain.
And also, don't you love the fact, I mean, we unearthed this clip this week on the subject of Sue Gray, which he said only a few weeks ago when he was in Northern Ireland, and some journalist said to him, you know, can you please clarify what's going on with Sue Gray? A lot of rumours abound about how she's very divisive and there's lots of backstabbing going on, and, you know, people at war with each other behind the closed doors of Downing Street. And he just did that very tense thing that he does. He just went, yes, I can answer that. That's complete nonsense. Is that clear? You know, like some scalding teacher.
He gets tetchy.
Right, wanker.
He doesn't like it when he's challenged.
He doesn't like it. And he was fucking wrong, again. Because it turns out that she's been fired because she was a fucking divisive person and they were all at each other's throats around the back of Downing Street.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he must have known that, therefore he's a liar, again.
She was two things, I believe. Divisive. An office warrior, always at war, trying to be the person closest to the boss. And also she was useless.
Well, that's the real truth of it, isn't it?
His problem, or Keir's problem in terms of Sue Gray, was that he didn't compute the truth about civil servants.
Yeah.
They can't do anything. Mm. They never do anything.
Yeah.
They just sit around shuffling documents, sending emails. They never achieve fucking anything. No. So him bringing her into his operation was a way of not achieving anything.
Yeah.
He's certainly done
that in style.
Yeah, she gets involved in this political office politics war
with
this brilliantly named guy, Morgan McSweeney.
I know, what a bizarre name
Morgan
that is.
McSweeney.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think he's a fucking genius, but he's obviously a little bit more astute than her. He tore her up.
He took her down, didn't he?
He tore her up for arse paper, and she got fired. Now, here's the funny thing, talking about how petty this office war was between these two. So the whole thing in Downing Street is, you know, can you get your desk close to where the Prime Minister where his office is.
Which is pretty pathetic to begin
with. Well, yeah, it's really pathetic. Anyway, so he had his desk pretty close to Keir's office, and she had it overnight moved twice. One day he comes in, he's a bit further away. The next day he's further away. But anyway...
You might have had this in newspapers, I don't know, but I certainly did. When I was made something like... What was the title they gave me? Something like Executive Features Editor. Or deputy features or something like that.
Yeah.
And I went over to sit in the features department, and of course they didn't want me there because the editor had appointed me, right? And I didn't realise until about 4 days in. I thought, because in those days we have sort of had mobiles, we didn't really use them as much, you know.
Yeah.
And they were big fucking bricks, so people would still use the landline. And after about 4 days, I thought, yeah, my fucking phone never rings. It's very weird, that. What the fuck? Why does it not ring?
Hooked it up.
No, they fucking re-diverted it, right? So I called down to Switchboard, and I was like, oh, hi, this is Mike Graham, etc., blah, whatever. They said, oh, yeah. I said, I'm not getting any calls. Is there a problem with the phone? They went, no, it's diverted to voicemail. And I went, well, I didn't do that. And they said, well, somebody did. So these other fucking cunts who were sitting around me who didn't want me there had diverted all my calls without me knowing.
You've got to be very careful, right? Particularly on Fleet Street. Years ago when I was on The Sun in the 1980s, a guy called Graham Ball.
I remember him.
An old friend of mine, actually.
He's Tessa Hilton's husband, isn't he?
He died, didn't he?
I'm
afraid he did. Yeah. Rather drank too much, I'm afraid. Mm. But he was a nice guy at his time, and he was recruited by Kelvin McKenzie as features editor.
Right.
There was already a features editor there.
Right.
And Graham...
And they just left you to it, didn't they?
Yeah, Graham, after 2 days, he said, you got time for a quick... I said, yeah, sure. So we go down to the local pub in Wapping, and I said, how's it going? He said, well, it's not going at all well. I said, what's up? He said, well, you know, they haven't really given me any facilities or anything. I said, well, what do you mean? Where's your desk? He said, well, that's where it starts.
Right.
I haven't got one.
Got
they didn't even give him a fucking desk.
But this was what the editors used to do. They'd go, right, here's a new job. But the day that I was appointed, actually, it was Nick Lloyd, following up. And a guy called Paul Potts, who was a deputy.
Yeah, I remember Paul.
So I was sitting in my normal reporter's chair, which is where I'd come in, because I was told to come in a bit early, about 9:45. And the news editor, Ian Walker, came over to me, and he said, oh, I just had Paul Potts on the phone. He said, because he knew about the point, he said, why don't you go around and sit in features? And I went, okay, is that what I should do then? He said, yeah, that's what you should do. So I walked around to features, and there was a guy called Roger Watkins there. You might remember him from years ago.
Yeah, good. Names from the past.
And a couple of other guys. And I said, hi, guys, how are you? And they went, yeah, great. How are you? I said, yeah, fine. And I said to them, would you be surprised to see me around here? And they all sort of went, no, it's always great to see you news guys around here. If you've got a couple of ideas, first we'll put them into conference. I'm like, well, here's an idea for you. I'm now your fucking boss. And they had nobody fucking told them.
That's so true.
Right? Nobody.
On Fleet Street, they call it creative tension.
Yes.
The Daily Mail was the Daily Mail was the past master of creative tension.
Right.
And I can't tell you the number of stories I've been on. You turn up on a story, and there'd be two Daily Mail reporters who'd been sent to beat each other.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who were most nervous of each other. Right. Creative fucking
amazing.
Tension.
But
totally
clearly,
destructive.
But clearly that's what goes on in politics.
Yeah. All
offices are the same. Because it's even more, but it's even more petty and childish. Because I was saying this to somebody the other day. You know, Sue Gray finally loses out and gets beaten by McSweeney. But she claims that she was being kind of, you know, leaked against, so that all these leaking stories were coming out saying, actually, she's not very good. Actually, she didn't really ever plan the first 100 days. She didn't do fucking anything.
Yeah.
And she wasn't prepared at all for government. And so what would you think she would do as soon as she's moved out of that role? Instead of just keeping quiet and getting on with whatever the fucking new job is, she starts leaking to the Times because it's very obvious.
It's clearly her, wasn't
it? You know, clearly she was telling them, I was stitched up, I was brilliant at my job. But it was said by a friend of Sue Gray's, you know.
Well, the Morgan McSweeney's crew, if you like, are all fairly young blokes, Royster Doyster, kind of political age.
And did you read that shit about how they like to stay up late at night playing a card game, which is a bit like Game of Thrones or something? Well, that's a bunch of fucking weirdos.
Wankers. Anyway, they're called the Lads. Right. And, she briefed, clearly it came from her. You just can't have political aides ousting the chief of staff.
Right.
Yeah, tell that to Dominic Cummings.
Yeah, right.
It happens
in... And Alistair Campbell.
Yeah, it happens in every administration. You can have it, Sue. That's another area in which you're obviously total bollocks. You don't get it.
Right.
But as I say, she comes from the civil service where they never have to do anything.
Right.
In fact, they don't do anything.
Right.
She came to the number 10 Downing Street, the office, and you have to do things there. You have to achieve stuff. And guess what? This brilliant, brilliant career... but a career civil servant turns out to be shit.
Yes.
Simple as that.
And it is, I think it is as simple as that. But unfortunately for us and for the rest of the fucking country, they're all shit. Basically, none of them know what the fuck they're
doing. This bloke McSweeney won't be any better.
He won't be any good. I mean, he's probably brilliant at organising campaigns and sort of running things within the Labour Party. That's not the same as being in government. Because one of the things that Starmer has completely failed to fucking understand is the way that people think of him. The fact that they now think he's less popular than fucking Rishi Sunak. The fact that they now don't trust him. The fact that they now think of him as a sleazy motherfucker.
Yeah.
They don't think of him as this kind of lawyer who's a bit boring but very competent. Because he's none of those things.
Yeah,
he's absolutely fucking useless.
Oh, I had Tim Montgomery, the excellent former Conservative Home Editor, used to be a Downing Street spad, if you like.
He's worked in it, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, for big time, for several administrations. And he said, so I said, look, you've been in, it was on my show last night, I said, you've been in Downing Street, I mean, you know, you're a political advisor, you advise Boris Johnson and all that. I said, what would you advise Keir Starmer to do about Freebiegate?
Right.
How can he draw a line under this?
Yes.
How can he solve this problem?
Right.
And he said, best one in the world, Kev. It's too late.
Yeah.
He is stuck with that forever.
Right.
So he's totally fucked it. He's totally fucked it. And when you add that, when you mix into the equation of Freebiegate, the fact that they took away the pensioners' winter fuel allowance, it's a really toxic cocktail.
Right.
And people, you know, ordinary people fucking hate this government.
Of course
much
do.
More than they ever did the Tories.
Well, do you know what was interesting? I think I mentioned this. No, I wouldn't have done because I hadn't seen it yet. End of Thursday, I was watching Question Time. Then you know they now put it out at 8 o'clock, so you can actually watch before I have to go to bed. And it was about the first. This is when you know it's cutting through when programs like that talk about it, because an awful lot of the press and the media weren't doing it because we were the only ones fucking running with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because lots of people were going, oh yeah, it's not really important. So you wouldn't see it on Sky. You wouldn't really see it on fucking BBC. Funnily enough, they've picked it up a bit now. But Question Time, the first question was about, you know, how do these MPs justify their continued snouts in the trough behaviour when so many people are struggling, when they're taking money away from pensioners? And it went on for about the first 25 minutes of the show. And that's when you know ordinary people are fucking fed up.
Yeah, yeah. And then the Labour guy, they were in Scotland, weren't they?
Yeah.
And the Labour guy was just one of these automatons going,
yeah, James Murray.
The rules were obeyed and all this kind of...
You can't keep saying that.
Change the fucking rules. It's as simple as that.
Well, I had fucking Hamish Faulkner on, one of the junior ministers. God knows, I can't imagine how he got to be a junior minister in the Foreign Commonwealth Office. Maybe something to do with the fact that his dad's the former Attorney General for Tony Blair. Do you think he might be connected?
Yeah.
Anyway, he was woefully fucking underprepared. And I said to him, you know, what is going on? Is this now, you know, the sort of scandal that is going to bring the Prime Minister down? And he said, well, the only reason we're talking about it is because he's been so transparent and he's reported everything. And I was like, you just don't get it, do you? I said,
and he hasn't been.
I said, by the way, he hasn't been, because he, first of all, at least on one occasion, reported
very
it wrongly.
Very late with his wife.
He only did his wife after he was reminded of it.
Yeah.
Didn't also include the second lot of clothing, 16,000.
16 grand's worth.
Put that down as office costs, right? So that's not, in my view, transparent.
He lied.
And he said, well, he's declared everything. I said, are you sure? And he went, what do you mean? I said, well, are you sure that there's not going to be another thing that's going to come out which he hasn't declared? And he went, he sort of froze and went, you'd have to ask him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, at the end of the day, I can't ask him because he won't come on the fucking show.
Do you know the thing about Freebiegate is, have you noticed, I mean, going back to that, I saw the Question Time debate about freebies, and of course they're all the party, the SNP.
And they're all at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have you noticed how mute the other parties yeah. are about freebie
and
bets.
This is the problem.
Because this is a cross-party problem. They yeah. all like their freebies. Yeah. What they don't realise, what Starmer doesn't realise, what all of that Westminster bunch of wankers don't realise, is the process has started. And before too long, whether they like it or not, and the answer will be they won't like it, they're going to have to ban freebies.
Yeah.
You know, so when
it's the only way out.
It is, and they'll be very reluctant to do it. But they'll have to do it, otherwise there'll be no trust.
But you know what they'll do, though? They'll say, well, we told you that if we weren't able to do this and get donations from private individuals and companies, that we would have to seek that money from the public. So now we're going to construct some kind of method whereby the public pays, the taxpayer pays. And I don't think the taxpayer's going to wear that, because we're going to say, well, all right, if you want us to be in charge, that's fine,
yeah.
but these are the things you can't claim for.
Yeah, yeah.
These are the things you can't have. Why the fuck should you get free Taylor Swift tickets when everybody else has to pay for them? Why the fuck should you get free clothes when everybody else has to pay for them?
Pay from out of your fucking salaries. Yeah.
And also, by the way, you get expenses already.
Yeah, exactly right. And when Starmer stood up the other day and said, right, you know, I hear you, I'm going to give back the 6,000 quid worth of freebies I've taken since being Prime Minister. I mean, why doesn't that cunt even understand that as Prime Minister, you shouldn't be accepting freebies, even if the rest of them are, you shouldn't be. Anyway, he says, I'm going to hand back this £6,000. And that was a really politically naive thing to do, because that is 1/20th of the freebies that he's taken since 2019.
Yeah.
1/20th. So he's saying, but when he says, I'm handing these back, he implicitly says it was wrong for me to take them.
Exactly.
So that means the rest of all the freebies were wrong as well.
Exactly right. But also he said he was doing it as a matter of principle, right? And then he was asked, well, are you then going to make everybody else give theirs back? And he went, no, that's entirely up to them. Well, that's not a fucking principle.
Yeah.
That's just you trying to make out that you've done the right thing. And again, it illustrates how useless Keir Starmer is at reading the fucking room.
Yeah, and going back to that question time, as we went round, the Labour guy was absolutely disastrous.
He was.
They all were.
The SNP woman.
The SNP, that little blonde woman, was bloody
awful.
Useless. Right. And so in the end, they kept. So Fiona Bruce, to her credit, didn't let any of the off the hook, because the SNP woman was going on about, what's his name, Flynn, isn't it?
Yeah,
Stephen Flynn, the SNP leader, going to Wimbledon, free tickets to the Wimbledon finals. And she and Fiona, so they kept talking about, well, this is about engaging with the public.
Right.
And so Fiona Bruce says, well, he's the leader of the Scottish National Party. Well, why does he have to go to the final of the Wimbledon? And she kept praying. And all of these politicians on that Question Time panel, in the end, they went, oh, you'd have to ask him.
Right.
You'd have to ask him.
Well,
you'd have to
I
ask
him.
It's pathetic.
This. I had a bit of this, and this is where we bring in the Tories, right? Because I remember when I had James Cleverly on the show a few weeks back. It was when we were looking at...
Loser.
We were looking at all of the money that was being claimed by people like Rachel Reeves, cabinet ministers, Angela Rayner, I think, was one as well, claiming for the heating allowance in their second homes, by the way, through the parliamentary expenses scheme, while taking away the pensioners' benefits. So I put it to Cleverly and I said, look, I said, why are you guys not making more of a fuss of it? Because I said, obviously, this is a great attack line for you as a Tory opposition.
Well, right?
And I said, have you ever claimed it? And he went, well,
I
have claimed it from my home in Essex. And I'm thinking, first of all, you don't need a second home in fucking Essex. Is that your first home? You know, people who live in Essex and who work in London, genuinely speaking, actually have to commute. You know,
MPs are always encouraged to have a home in the constituency. But what you're right, that this is exactly it.
Right.
The Tories, SNP, Lib Dems, very quiet about this because they've got their snouts in the trough.
They're all at it.
Say, what they don't realise, because they can't bear the thought of it, is the journey has started and the destination is no more freebies whatsoever.
It's going to have to go that way.
Because the public are disgusted.
Right.
They're
but
disgusted.
The problem is that you saw it on Question Time and you explained it very, very well. They don't understand why the public don't like it. They think they're doing all the right things because they think the people are going to go, oh, that's okay, it's not your fault. It's like, you know, the parliamentary
register
of interest, but also the parliamentary body, what's it called? The one that awards them a pay rise.
And
they think we're fucking stupid to believe when they say, oh, but that was obviously awarded to us by a third party, It's nothing to do with us. We didn't ask for a pay rise. Well, don't fucking take it then.
And
that, you know,
and they,
if Rupert Lowe, the Reform MP, can have his fucking salary donated every month, I know not everybody can do that, but, you know, it's possible to live and work as an MP without having to absolutely rinse the fucking public.
Well, anyway, by talking of cleverly, we arrive at this podcast literally minutes after the vote, which shockingly, surprisingly, eliminated.
Right, because everyone was talking about as a winner, weren't they?
You can probably reveal what a brilliant political...
Yes, I mean, there was a moment a bit earlier on today, Kevin... Very, very confidently predicted. Well, of course, James Cleverly's going to be the next Tory leader. And I just went, are you sure about that? And he went, he might lose. But, I mean, we sort of gave him...
I owe you a fucking favour, because otherwise it would have been unequivocal.
But you weren't the only one saying it. There were plenty of people saying James Cleverly now looks like the guy. He made a great speech at Tory party conference. Still, I think people are not as interested as the newspapers may think they are. So now we're down to basically Kemi Badenoch and Robert Jenrick. And I've always said from the beginning that I think Jenrick...
I think Jenrick.
But I think...
Oh, my, just don't listen to me.
No. What the fuck do you know? But on the other hand, people say that she is popular in... I mean, this is the bit where it now goes to the membership, right?
This is the game changer.
Yeah.
And if you remember, what was it now, 2-3 years ago, when Sunak and Truss went head-to-head. And The membership, the Tory membership, are different to the parliamentary party.
Right.
They're much more right-wing. Mm. If you remember, Truss went around saying, what do you want? I'll do that.
Right.
Anything they wanted, she said she'd do.
Right.
Now, Jenrick, I think, comes down to this. The big issue for Tories, for people in this country, is the migrant crisis.
Yeah, the immigration crisis.
Yeah, it's gotta be. And all Jenrick got to say is, vote for me, and I will take Britain out of the European Convention on Human Rights, what we were talking about earlier. And then he's pointed at Kemi and says, she wants to stay in it.
Right.
Ergo, Kemi, you're fucked.
Yeah, right. And so I can't actually call it. I mean, I've always said I think Jenrick will win it.
I think he will.
But I don't know whether she may have more support in the shires. People may think she's a bit more of a straight down the line conservative. Difficult to say, really. She does seem to be a woman who upsets an awful lot.
She's abrasive.
Yeah.
But her problem.
I don't mind that though.
No, I don't particularly mind it, but I don't mind it at all. But people don't like her.
Yeah.
And in the end, you've got to have people who like you.
Yes.
So Jenrick, I think, is quite good at being affable.
Yeah.
She's not.
Although the funniest thing I saw this week about Robert Jenrick was Nigel Farage doing a kind of an interview somewhere, and he basically said, you know, the problem with Robert Jenrick is he's doing a Nigel Farage tribute act. He said, I can actually help him because I am Nigel Farage, and I can tell him how to be more like me if he'd like to make the call, you know.
Yeah.
Because he has suddenly had this Damascene conversion, hasn't he? He's gone from being a sort of what I would call a bit wet.
Well, he was called Robert Jenrick.
He was a bit wet. And, you know, suddenly turns into this guy who wants to, you know, break down the culture wars.
I know that.
Start deporting people en masse. And
he's gone very right wing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he should... People are really having a go at him about it. Oh, you've changed and everything. Yeah. Well, in my view, he's changed for the better.
Yeah.
I think he's genuine. And don't forget, the reason he changed was... he was sent to the Home Office to be Home Office Minister when Suella Braverman was Home Secretary by Sunak to keep an eye on her because Sunak didn't want her to get too right wing.
Right.
And Jenrick arrives at Home Office, discovers it's a complete shit show, and that's why he changed his mind. He said, this is a shambles, we've got to sort it out.
Right.
I think he should be cut
some... And that was when he resigned, wasn't
it? Yeah, I think he should be cut some slack for that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to be honest, I don't think it really matters, but I would like to see the Tories being a bit more fucking robust against this shit government, because that's not what they're doing at the moment.
Well, I mean, it's been a... Well, this is the magnitude of the achievement of Keir Starmer. He's managed to become like a kind of public enemy number one, the person that everyone hates, turned this government into a hated government in 3 months flat with no opposition. Yeah. No one standing there saying this guy's a cunt, saying this government's fucking useless. No one's saying
He's done it on his own.
Yeah, he's done it on his own. So the Tories, for Christ's sake, get yourself a leader and start being an opposition, because they haven't been.
Because I still think that this could all come off the rails, and I still think we could have an election. Everybody keeps saying to me, oh, there's no mechanism for that. Well, there's always a mechanism for something when it goes to shit. And when something goes so badly wrong as this has done, there will be people in the Labour Party who don't want Starmer around. And maybe then That's when the pressure starts.
He's just not right, is he?
He really isn't.
He's not right.
He's like a fucking robot. He's not, and a bad one.
He just seems to be a sort of weird oddball.
Yeah.
Who definitely is not cut out to be prime minister.
Definitely he doesn't not. Have the ability. He's tetchy. He has no people skills. Mm. He doesn't know how to really address a crowd and get them going. No. He's got none of the kind of charm of Nigel Farage. He's got none of the chutzpah of somebody like Kerry Badenoch. And he doesn't even seem to have the ability. I mean, he must have been a fucking useless lawyer. He doesn't have any ability to convince you of doing something and why we're doing it and why we should be doing it and why doing something else is a mistake.
Well, you know what? He was a human rights lawyer. And you know, when I achieve total power, which won't be long, I'm going to ban human rights lawyers.
Excellent. It's going to be a ban. But he was also director of public prosecutions.
Yeah.
How the fuck did that work?
Yeah.
Not very well.
Not very well.
No. I mean, he spent more time trying to prosecute fucking journalists than he did fucking, people like Jimmy Savile.
28 of them and lost every single case.
And fucking grooming game.
I always think that the press should give him a harder time for that.
Yeah.
28 journalists from The Sun he tried to put in jail for doing their fucking jobs.
Yeah.
Every single one of them acquitted at the cost of tens of millions, probably £100 million pounds to the public purse. He's fucking useless.
He is. Fucking useless. Simon. Get the fuck out. Simple as that. We're out of time, I think.
All right.
Unless you want to mention anything before we go. We're going to talk about dogs on Hampstead Heath.
Oh, yeah, dogs on Hampstead Heath.
Quick five minutes on that. Yeah, apparently somebody's poisoning the fucking ponds on Hampstead Heath.
Well, I think my dog has to plead guilty to that, because these are the ponds. Do you know there's 38 ponds on Hampstead Heath? There are fucking thousands on them. But there are three big ones, and apparently they're polluted by this very dangerous chemical that is very bad for the fish and for the weeds and for everything, the whole ecosystem. Right. And what it is these flea treatments that you put on your back of, it's called Protocol or something. You put it on the back of your dog's neck,
right?
Just a tiny drop,
to keep the fleas away.
And the fleas don't come anywhere near.
Right.
But it's an extremely powerful chemical.
Right.
So the dogs are all diving into the water and apparently spreading it.
Oh, God.
And it's causing an eco disaster on Hampstead Heath. I mean, my fucking dog lives in those ponds. But I tell you what, talking of that chemical thing, right? So they say when you put it on the back of your dog's back, you don't get your hands anywhere near
really?
It.
Really? It's that bad?
So you put a drop of dung. So I once was doing it and I got a little bit on my thumb.
Yeah.
And I wiped it straight off. And over the course of the next sort of 3 months, that little area literally turned into a kind of stone.
Wow.
And then fell off.
Wow.
It's fucking powerful stuff.
Crikey.
Don't go to Hampstead Heath, folks.
It's not made in a fucking Wuhan lab, is it?
I think it might be.
Yeah, don't go to Hampstead Heath. Also, if you see Chasbo, you'll know it's him.
Yeah.
He's fucking running around like a maniac, barking like fuck.
Yeah, he's a lunatic dog.
He's a great dog, but he's fucking crazy. Anyway, that's it for this week. We'll see you next week. Hopefully, there'll be even more fucking scandal.
There will be, guaranteed.
Twats. Go
Cheers,
fuck
guys.
Yourself.
Fuck off.